Good afternoon. The Committee on the Health and Human Services Finance Division will please come to order. We do have a quorum. Do we have a motion to approve the minutes of the last meeting?
So moved.
Representative Hamilton moves to approve the minutes of February 5th, 2019. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. The minutes are approved. Thank you. And members, today we are going to be hearing a little bit about an issue that has been a bit below the radar, but I think is extremely important to us as a state. And that is stems from actions that were taken in the last couple of years around HMOs and their changing status or potentially changing status in our state. We have distributed to everyone a letter from the Minnesota Department of Health that references something called a dividend of $55 million that Medica has transferred or asked to transfer, probably already has transferred, out of its healthcare company and into another entity. And so what happened, we're going to hear some background on this from the Minnesota Department of Health, which is the regulator for the HMOs, at least with regard to this part of their business. And then we're going to hear from Medica about this issue. So with that, I'm going to call up we have a couple of testifiers from the Department of Health. Please come forward. And we're going to start with that presentation. And Representative Grunhagen, you have a question already.
Yeah.
Please.
I woke up with it, to tell you the truth. No. I was thinking about HHS committee. No, I'm just kidding. This letter says January 29th they were going to let Medica know. So they must have either transferred or not, right? Did they transfer it, or?
Well, Representative Grunhagen, we're having a whole hearing on this very topic. So I think we'll probably find out the answer to that question. I don't personally know that, but hopefully some of the people in the room do and will tell us exactly what the situation has been with that. Thank you. So I'm so, you know, it does actually, I do like the fact that you're engaged in what we're going to talk about so much so that you have the questions and you want them answered, and then we have the hearings that answer the questions. That is, honestly, that is the way it ought to be.
Maybe together we can change the world.
Well, I think it does say that we're addressing things that are of interest to members, and I'm glad if we are, because I think that's part of our purpose here. So with that, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourselves and go ahead and give us your presentation.
Yeah. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Diane Rydrick, and I'm the Director of the Health Policy Division at the Minnesota Department of Health.
And Madam Chair, my name is Marie Dotseth, and I'm an Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Health.
And as you can tell, we're going to try and keep Marie from talking too much today because she's a little froggy.
My apologies.
And I'm sitting a little farther away from her than I might otherwise.
And you are the Department of Health, so
I know. Can you believe it? Not a great representative today.
Social distancing. So, Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for having us here today to speak to this important issue, which, as you noted, has been a topic of concern for legislators and others for the last couple of years. I apologize that I'll be reading my testimony just because there's kind of a long timeline here and a lot of details that I want to make sure that I get correct as I'm reading through it. So, before I speak to the specific dividend or asset transfer that was referenced in the letter that Representative Grunhagen mentioned, I'd like to provide a little bit of background information, knowing that there are some new members on the committee who may not have been aware of some of the history on these issues. So as a reminder, in January 2017, the legislature enacted and the governor signed a change in law that repealed a provision in Chapter 62D that had required Minnesota's HMOs to use all of their net earnings for the nonprofit purposes of the HMO in providing comprehensive health care, and that prohibited the payment of dividends. During March of 2017,
Margaret.
Yeah.
If I could just stop you right there. Mm-hmm. You went through that really quickly. And one of the issues, one of the core issues that we're here to discuss today, mm-hmm. and I really want to flag that for members because this is language that, to my memory, we never discussed on the floor. And I personally didn't even realize we discussed other things in the bill. It was never debated, and I was not even aware at the time that this language was being repealed. Now, maybe other members were, but I want you to read it slowly mm-hmm. so members understand what we're talking about mm-hmm. because, in fact, I wish we had that printed out because, and you, do you have it?
Mm-hmm. I do, Madam Chair. I do at least have the language that was repealed in 2017, which I can read. I don't have copies of it, but if it's helpful, I could read. The language that was deleted in 2017 yes. was from Chapter 62D12, Subdivision 9, and the title of that subdivision is Net Earnings. It says, all net earnings of a health maintenance organization shall be devoted to the nonprofit purposes of the health maintenance organization in providing comprehensive health care. No health maintenance organization shall provide for the payment, whether directly or indirectly, of any part of its net earnings to any person as a dividend or rebate, provided, however, that health maintenance organizations may make payments to providers or other persons based upon the efficient provision of services or as incentives to provide quality care. The Commissioner of Health shall, pursuant to Section 62D.01 to 62D.30, revoke the certificate of authority of any health maintenance organization in violation of this subdivision.
And Mr. Friedrich, how long had that been in statute, if you know?
Madam Chair, I'm afraid I do not know a long time, a number of years, but I do not know when that section was enacted. We can find that out.
Okay, and maybe
or staff can.
Or maybe nonpartisan staff knows the answer to that. Do you have any idea? I think it's like 20 or 30 years. Am I right?
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I don't know either. I'd have to check, but I can do that. Okay. One of us can do that.
Okay. And Representative Hamilton?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And when was that repealed again?
This was repealed in 2017. It was repealed in the bill, I think, the one that established the initial premium discount program that Governor Dayton wanted. If you remember, there was quite a tussle over whether that was going to be approved. It was finally approved, but in that bill, there were some kind of, I guess, sweeteners for the GOP in that bill, as well as his program, which was short-term. And that bill also allowed for-profit health insurers to come into Minnesota. And that was where the discussion focused. The discussion did not focus on the repeal of this language that was in there. And Ms. Reidrich, you're kind of shaking your head if I'm saying mm-hmm. this correctly.
Yeah, Madam Chair, so at that time in 2017, our HMO oversight function was in a different part of the department than my division, so I wasn't as closely involved in that. But what you're describing reflects my general understanding of what the issues were that were at play at that time. And it was at the same time when for-profit HMOs were allowed in Minnesota.
Representative Zirwan.
Madam Chair, I think as we talk about kind of this and other really big public policy issues around health care in the state, I think it would be helpful for us to have a productive conversation. And so I think if we start framing things as sweeteners for the GOP, I think understand that allowing more competition and recruiting more competition into the health insurance space was one of the things we were trying to do. Prior to that, we had seen a huge drop in plans and coverage options throughout Minnesota, specifically in greater Minnesota, where at that time I think north of 50 counties were offering a whole one option. And so I think let's not do that today.
Well, Representative Zirwan,
just
to put forward, I think that what you just said kind of puts a point on it. This is something the GOP wanted. I'm not going into why it was wanted or whether it was a good thing, to your point. But it is, in fact, this was just to lay the what was going on, that this was in the governor's bill for his discount program, which the governor wanted, and these other things I thought came from the GOP. Now, if I'm mistaken on that, please correct me, but I don't want to debate whether that was a good thing or a bad thing, but I just want to lay the foundation here that this is what we did, and we're going to focus just on this language and what flows from that. We're not really talking today about the wisdom or non-wisdom of having for-profit HMOs come in, but we're focusing on the repeal of this language and kind of what's happened subsequently to that. Okay. So, and if we could get that language, I think that would be, you're working on that, great, because I think it's important to have members. It's just a paragraph, but it will be important for members to actually see the language. Please continue.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. And so, again, I'll walk through some of the history with reference to some past transfers that have happened. And the timeline is important because each of those transfers happened in a different statutory and legal environment, as you will see. So the language that we just discussed was repealed in January of 2017. During March of 2017, MDH reviewed a request from Medica Health Plans, a nonprofit Minnesota HMO, to transfer a $30 million dividend to the also nonprofit Medica Health Plans of Wisconsin. Prior to the repeal of that section of statute, Minnesota HMO law prohibited such a dividend transfer, but due to the repeal of Minnesota Statute Section 62D12, Subdivision 9, in January, MDH had no legal basis to disapprove the request. In May of 2017, the legislature passed a two-year moratorium on conversion transactions, so from a nonprofit to a for-profit HMO. The moratorium was intended to prevent a Minnesota HMO from transferring all or a substantial portion of its assets to anything other than a nonprofit organization. Excuse me. That moratorium will expire on July 1st, 2019. In August of 2017, Medica Health Plan reported that their board had authorized the payment of a $90 million dividend to Medica Holding Company, a nonprofit corporation. Medica Holding Company would in turn transfer those assets to Medica Insurance Company, a for-profit insurance company licensed under Minnesota Statutes Chapter 62A. Excuse me. MDH reviewed the statutes and the information provided regarding the dividend transfer. We determined that the proposed dividend transfer comprised 11.2% of Medica's publicly reported admitted assets as of December 31, 2016, and determined that this did not meet the moratorium law's threshold of all or a substantial portion of those assets. We also determined that the proposed transfer would not risk the financial solvency of Medica. So based on the laws in effect at the time, MDH determined there was no basis in law to disapprove Medica Health Plan's request to transfer $90 million in dividend assets. So that's bringing us up to late 2017. So turning to the most recent transfer, Medica provided notice in late November of 2018 of their intent to distribute a $55 million dividend. MDH communicated to Medica in late December of 2018 that we would be reviewing the dividend transfer pursuant to the department's authority under Chapter 62D and 15.99 and asked Medica to delay the distribution until January 29th, 2019. In their response, Medica noted that while current law does not require them to report such a dividend to MDH, they would consider this to be a courtesy 10-day notification to MDH and assumed that they could proceed with the distribution after that time. MDH communicated again to Medica on January 4th that we would be taking 60 days as permitted under Chapter 15.99 to review the proposed dividend payment. As part of our analysis, we considered the destination of the transfer. The funds were intended to be distributed to Medica Holding Company. According to the Minnesota Secretary of State's office, Medica Holding Company is a nonprofit corporation organized under Chapter 317A. The current two-year moratorium on conversions and asset transfers only applies to asset transfers or conversions made to a for-profit entity. As such, because the proposed transfer involved a payment from one nonprofit organization, Medica Health Plans, to another nonprofit organization, Medica Holding Company, the current two-year moratorium did not bar Medica from making this transfer. So we communicated to Medica on January 29th, 2019, that our review was complete and that they could proceed with the transfer. So that brings us to where we are now.
Thank you. So is that the end of your presentation?
Madam Chair, it is.
Okay. All right. So I think that we've handed out this, this statute. Does everybody have that? Members have that? So I just wanted to flag this because this was, you know, regardless of, and again, Representative Zerwas, regardless of the wisdom of allowing for-profit entities or not allowing them, that's not really the focus of this hearing. But what you just heard, and I just heard, and if you add this up, we've got Medica just transferred, what, $175 million has now been transferred by Medica out into to other entities, and we're going to hear from them, and members can certainly ask questions about that. But, you know, under this language, if you look at it, I think the key part of this language, and again, we don't know how long this has been in effect, but I think it's been in effect, you know, I would say decades. And I had looked this up in the past. But this was always in effect since we have, probably since we had authorized this form of business from the beginning. And so the idea that the net earnings shall be devoted to the nonprofit purposes of the health maintenance organization in providing comprehensive health care. I don't know what was the purpose of repealing that. I don't know how that is necessary for even if you're going to have for-profit health companies in Minnesota. I don't know why you would repeal this language. It was never explained. It was never debated. But I think we're here because we're seeing what the result of that is, and that there is moratorium language in place, which apparently isn't sufficient to prevent these kinds of transfers from happening. So are there questions for members for the Department of Health? Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and to the Department of Health. I don't know if you prepared this chart or if it's just background material for us, but it presents an issue that I'm wondering to what degree in your regulatory function, regulating so much of our health industry, not just HMOs, but housing with services and licensing related to nursing homes and other things, it has always appeared to me that we are getting more complicated in the organization of businesses. And it used to be nonprofits were nonprofits, and they maybe would have a fundraiser that, you know, would be unrelated business earnings in the tax committee language. But we've never seen the amount of creativity that I'm aware of in recent years of integrating for-profit businesses under an umbrella of a nonprofit. And I'm wondering if this is an issue that you're running into other areas, or if you've wrestled with how do you hold accountable nonprofit entities that you oversee to fulfilling their statutory mission when we have for-profit affiliates connected to them. And do we have stark enough lines? And if this is something we have to take up with Commerce, I'd be glad to follow up with them. But you have regulatory authority, and I'm just wondering if you run into this, not just in this line of business, but others.
We'd like to take that. Ms. Rydrich?
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative Loeffler, I don't know, it might be a tag team, but I can take the first shot. I think that you are right that the organizational structures of a lot of the entities that provide health insurance coverage in Minnesota and other states are very complicated and have become more complicated over time. Often an organization will have for-profit and nonprofit affiliates as part of a larger corporate structure. The org chart that was a handout here today was not from us. I assume that was from Medica, but it does illustrate the complexity of managing some of these relationships. I do think that our laws, you know, our laws give some responsibilities to the Department of Commerce and some responsibilities to the Department of Health, and has different types of oversight and different requirements for different types of entities that may have looked very different in the past but no longer do, you know, because of the complexity of their corporate structures. And it does create challenges sometimes. I think this issue with the asset transfer is a good example of it, where there are prohibitions on certain types of transfers in a session law that's going to expire, but lack of clarity on reporting requirements for entities to any regulatory agency, how we define terms, what our responsibility is, where the AG's office fits into that in terms of their role regulating nonprofit organizations. It is a challenging environment to work in.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I do think this is an area that we need to spend some time and attention on, and I would welcome those in the audience and those who are wrestling with this to to join me in dealing with that, as well as defining much more clearly what are the nonprofit purposes that we have expectations of. We've done that for hospitals in terms of charity care. It's not about your marketing budget. It's about taking care of people and using your resources to improve health. And I think that's generally been our expectation. And it appears that we need some more accountability here and welcome the insight of others who better understand these complex relationships.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Representative Munson.
Yep, thank you, Madam Chair. And thanks for this presentation so far. It's the shock value is pretty impressive. I was very surprised to hear that, you know, nonprofits are allowed to pay dividends. It made it sound like that they're transferring all this money out of state, and I'm really interested to learn more about it, but I have a couple questions so far. Can you explain this? I hear the word dividends being paid, and then you mentioned asset transfers, which I think might be the technical term of what they're doing for mm-hmm. nonprofits. Are they moving, is it money that was being moved, or is it just an asset like buildings that are being moved under the other entity? I mean, we kind of imagine like filling an ambulance full of cash and driving, you know, to deliver money to another organization. But is this actually transferring money that's being paid to this organization, or is it assets?
Ms. Rydrich?
So, Madam Chair, Representative Munson, I am no financial expert. My understanding in this case, in each of these cases, is that these are actual financial transactions, a payment of a dividend. But I know that Medica is here after us at the table and could certainly speak to that more clearly.
Yeah, and thank you for that question, Representative Munson, because the question that I have is, why are we calling this a dividend? What makes it a dividend? And I know that that word has been used on some of the documents that were filed by Medica, mm-hmm. and you use that word as well. And I'm just, where is that term coming from here in this context?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, I mean, $100+ million, it sounds like a lot of money, but in as a percentage of revenue, do you know what percentage of this it is that they're transferring? Or I can wait for people from Medica as well to mm-hmm. ask the question. Thank you.
Ms. Rydrich?
Yep. So, Madam Chair, Representative Munson, so I mentioned the earlier $90 million transfer and how we looked at the proportion of the organization's admitted assets that was represented by that transfer. We did that for this transfer as well. We looked at their year-end financial reports, which are publicly available, and determined that the $55 million represented just over 11% of admitted assets as of year-end 2017. Again, I think the question may be more appropriate to Medica or to the Department of Commerce around sort of the details of how admitted assets are defined in this situation.
And Ms. Rydrich, where is the this idea that you are going to, that methodology that you just described, where you're comparing that to their admitted assets, as mm-hmm. you say, and just to flag this, it's not their income, it's their assets, it's their reserves that they've accumulated over however many years of being a nonprofit in Minnesota and all the benefits that come along with that status. So that's just to be clear, that's what we're talking about. But the methodology that the department used to determine whether these were substantial, where did that methodology come from?
Madam Chair, I would probably have to talk with staff about the details of that analysis. I have the bottom line number, but sort of what the elements of the equation are that go into that calculation, I think I would need to get back to you on that.
Okay, Representative Punish-Padin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you. The couple of questions that Representative Munson was part of my question as well, to define, you know, what is the dividend and who is receiving that, you know, what is the asset, what are the assets that we're talking about. But that $175 million that was transferred out, one time it went to Wisconsin. So this is a transfer from between states, and again, maybe this is some things that I should be asking Medica, but is that a common practice to sort of move money around between states, and is that part of the agreement with Minnesota and Medica?
Ms. Rydrich?
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative, So the transfer that eventually went to Medica Health Plans of Wisconsin, again, I think Medica can speak to that, but Medica Health Plans of Wisconsin is actually incorporated as a nonprofit in Minnesota with a St. Paul address. They would have to speak to kind of how the organizational structure works and how they provide services to enrollees in Wisconsin. As to whether it's common, not all HMOs have a multi-state presence. There are a number that are just in Minnesota or just operate in parts of Minnesota and so would not have that kind of an issue. But there are some entities, HMOs or for-profit organizations, that have a multi-state presence.
Follow-up, Representative Kunesh-Badin.
So do you know if those monies went to people or somebody or people in Wisconsin rather than in Minnesota, even though they're located here in Minnesota? They have that Wisconsin name on them. So were Minnesota funds then perhaps transferred to for use or dividends outside of Minnesota?
Ms. Rodrich?
Madam Chair and Representative, I think you would, I would direct that question to Medica.
Okay.
Our oversight of HMOs is only for HMOs that are licensed to do business in Minnesota. So any oversight that we have on financial solvency or assets or quality of care, et cetera, is for HMOs that are licensed to provide those services in Minnesota.
Okay. I have other questions, please. So where did this balance, these millions of dollars, come from?
Ms. Rydrick.
Madam Chair and Representative, I think that would be a question for Medica.
Okay.
There is no requirement in current law that Medica tell us what the source of those funds is.
Okay, and one more question.
Okay, Representative Kunesh-Badin.
So they collected this abundance of money from Minnesota, and we're not exactly sure where it came from. And do we know why so much of it was collected? Is it an overpayment?
Ms. Rodrich?
Madam Chair, Representative, there is no requirement in state law for any HMO that is doing a dividend payment like this to report to MDH what the source of the funds is.
Okay. And then just one more question, and maybe you can't answer this one, or I'll save it for Medica, but is there anything in statute that says if you collect an abundance over a certain amount, it has to be reinvested or it has to be repaid back, or you have to lower rates for patients, or it has to be reinvested into to Minnesotans for healthcare uses?
Ms. Rydrich.
Madam Chair and Representative, there are requirements. That's a difficult question. There are requirements for entities that provide insurance to spend a certain percentage of the money that they receive on paying claims. There are medical loss ratio requirements that do govern how much of the revenue that they receive needs to be for providing those services. There is no law in Minnesota that I am aware of that says you have to. Or at least not in our area of oversight that would do what you describe. There may be questions that you would want to ask the Attorney General's office around nonprofit law more broadly,
okay,
beyond the scope of the HMOs that we regulate.
Okay, thank you.
And Representative Kunesh-Badin, we did have some regulation around this, and that's that language that we handed out that was repealed.
Okay, thank you.
So Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's what I noticed, too. It was in there before, and it's not in there anymore.
Right.
So I just wanted to back up to the point of where the Medica plan is paid for and the oversight of what those dollars are for. I mean, and as far as contract, I'm new at this, but I'm presuming there's a contract for the HMO provides contracts for care for a given number of services, and there's a negotiated price for that. And I'm just wondering about the frequency of the negotiation for cost to the state for these plans. Is that yearly? Is there a formula for that. Does that make sense?
Maybe I could help a little bit here, please. Representative Bierman, because it's kind of not really intuitive how we run all this, to say the least. But it's the Department of Human Services who does the contracting and could probably answer those questions, okay. Whereas the Department of Health, who you have here, has some oversight responsibility, but not of the contracting itself. So the contracting is a whole world of complication in itself that we could get into.
So, Madam Chair, I did say I was new, so I appreciate you allowing the question and finding out where that question should be directed. But I think, you know, despite the fact that they transfer all this money, that's where the crux of the problem is, and that seems to me to be where we need to be, what we need to be looking into.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Bierman. And, you know, you could also direct some of these questions to Medica when they're at the table. But and don't apologize for being new. I mean, I think it's really helpful. You know, we are being watched by the public as well. And I would venture to say that most people who live in the state have no idea how these things happen and how complicated they are. So your questions are, there is no dumb question in this area. I want to say that to everybody. I'm probably asking a lot of dumb questions myself, you know. We cannot be afraid to ask even the basic questions, because if you don't understand it, lots and lots of other people don't either. So very pleased that you're asking. And let's see, I have Munson and then Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My questions are about these transfers. For these multi-state HMOs, are insurance companies allowed to transfer money to a nonprofit in another state just to offset risk because they're large enough to do so? And then the second one is, has Medica ever transferred, or a similar organization, transferred money basically the reverse of this direction? So putting money into their nonprofit for any reason, and are you notified of those transfers? Or is that you only look at the one-way transfers going in this direction?
Ms. Rydrich, or Assistant Commissioner?
Yeah. Madam Chair and Representative Munson, we're just considering the answer to that one.
We've got some good sharp questioners, yes, in this committee.
A question we hadn't prepared for. The only dividend payments like this or asset transfers that we are aware of in recent years are the ones that we have mentioned from Medica. But until 2017, there was a prohibition. We only had nonprofit HMOs, and there was a prohibition on them paying transfers. So, and since that time, we have not heard of any others. But there is not a requirement to report them to MDH. So I don't know that we would know. And I think that would apply to any direction if it involves an HMO that we license. Your other question was?
Transfers in.
Transfers in.
Oh.
I don't know that we have an answer for that.
Yeah, I don't.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I would just note, though, kind of going back to Representative Loeffler's question earlier, you know, we have insurance companies, we have HMOs, we have health plan service companies, we have a lot of different names for entities that provide insurance. And there are other chapters of law that require other types of entities to report when they make a dividend payment, for-profit entities. And so there are laws that cover some other entities when they make payments of this sort. The complexity, I think, is with HMOs just because of the repeal of the language in 2017.
And before I go to Representative Hamilton, Ms. Rydrich, just to be clear, though, the reason that this committee is focusing now on Medica, it's not because we're picking on Medica, it's because Medica is the only one that's done this. Am I right in that? We haven't had other HMOs transferring their assets yet.
Madam Chair, Medica is the only HMO that we are aware of that has made dividend payments or transfers like this.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, my understanding is that dividends are profits paid to shareholders. So my question is, what is the definition of a nonprofit in the state of Minnesota?
Great question, Representative Hamilton. Maybe, I don't know if staff is prepared to answer that, or if, let me first ask our testifiers. Do you have a definition of nonprofit?
Madam Chair, no. In our oversight of HMOs, we look at what the requirements are for an HMO, which is now nonprofit or for-profit, but we don't have a global definition of nonprofit that we use for that work. We are guided by the statutes that lay out the requirements for HMOs.
Okay, and I don't know if anybody from House Research has that.
Madam Chair and Representative Hamilton, all I can say right now is that a nonprofit is an entity that's organized and regulated by Chapter 317A of Minnesota statutes, but I don't know much about this chapter. But I can provide more information if that's useful.
Thank you. Representative Hamilton?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Are there other questions from members? Okay, I think that is it for now, and if you would please stay around, I'm sure you will, and in case we have other questions. Thank you. So we're going to invite up Medica, and I don't know if you had a presentation you wanted to make or if you, you know, I know we did get a map, and actually it's our mistake. Usually members, we should put who the source of the map is from. It does say Medica legal entity chart, but this did come from Medica, just to be clear, right? This, you guys helped us by distributing this for us or giving us to distribute. So that's what that is. And so please introduce yourselves, and if you have a presentation at all, go ahead. And if you're just going to answer questions, we can go ahead with that too.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, my name is Jay McLaren, and I'm the Vice President of Public Policy and Government Relations at Medica. I really appreciate the opportunity to present to the committee today. As the Department of Health stated earlier, this is a relatively new law change in Minnesota that went into effect just a couple years ago. So the allowance of HMOs to transfer funds at all is a relatively new thing, and we understand that it would raise a lot of questions for committee members, so we're happy to be here to do that. As many of the committee members are new, I'd like to start from the beginning of just giving some background information of our organization. And just so people get an understanding of where we are and who we've been. So,
and we, before we do yeah, that, could we please have the other testifier introduced so we know who we're talking to here?
Yeah. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Representatives. My name is Mary Quist, and I'm Medica's Vice President of Finance and Corporate Controller.
Okay, thank you. Welcome to the committee. Go ahead, Mr. McLaren.
She's the wizard of smart for the numbers, Madam Chair. So we were founded in 1974 as a nonprofit HMO under the name of Physicians Health Plan. So while over the years our name has changed from time to time, we have continued to be a nonprofit organization as a whole, and Ms. Quist will walk through that for you. And essentially what that means is that every dollar that our organization makes is reinvested back into our organization to better serve our members and offer high-quality health insurance for the members that we serve in Minnesota. So that's happened ever since our inception in 1974, and Ms. Quist, again, will go through some of the organizational structure of who we are and how we're organized. So at Medica, our mission is to be the trusted health plan of choice for our members, customers, partners, and employees. So this mission really does drive our work throughout our organization, from how we answer calls from our members and our call center on a daily basis, to hosting open forums with our employees, and also to our interactions with key stakeholders and key decision makers such as you. So we really appreciate the opportunity to present today. And as we begin the conversation of the financial transfer, it's important to understand the structure of our organization, so I'll have Ms. Quist do that. But the whole purpose of our organization and the ability of us to be able to deploy capital to where it's needed is very important for us as an organization. The needs of our members change constantly, and our ability to deploy that capital to the different parts of our organization to serve our members is very important as their needs change and evolve. And it's further, I'd like to just let everyone know that everything that we did was in the full communication with our regulators in the state. As you see, even from the communication that the Department of Health received from us, every step, in the, as you heard from the testifiers from the department, everything that we did was in full compliance with the law and in full communication with them. As we move to deploy resources to different parts of our organization and to seek their approval when required under state law. So at this point, I'd like to hand it to Ms. Quist so she can walk through the chart that you have in front of you of our organizational structure. I really think that's an important conversation that's been missing so far that'll give you all a lot of context for what the Department of Health just presented. Thank you.
Ms. Quist.
Thank you. In front of you is an organization chart of Medica's legal entities. As Jay mentioned, our organization started with the yellow box that's a little bit in the middle but off to the left called Medica Health Plans. And it has been around since 1974, set up to provide group insurance to employers in the state of Minnesota. Over the years, business needs have changed. The community has needed a little bit broader coverage, and so other legal entities have emerged in our organization. So as we go a little bit to the right, we've mentioned before Medica Health Plans of Wisconsin. And we needed to set up that entity because Wisconsin and Minnesota laws don't allow each other to serve members in the other state. So those two states just have a little bit of a they don't allow HMOs to cross the border. And so we have constituents in western Wisconsin that we want to serve. So we created that entity in 1996. It's been around for many years. It's also a nonprofit HMO. It's regulated primarily under the laws of Wisconsin instead of Minnesota. A little bit of background on that one, on the transfer that we did earlier to Medica Health Plans of Wisconsin. The reason that was done is this entity received a license to provide individual coverage in Minnesota through the Affordable Care Act. And so those funds were needed as capital in order to support that business. The individual business since 2014 was written in Medica Health Plans of Wisconsin. So a little confusing with the name, but the membership in that entity was Minnesota, primarily Minnesotans. Off to the right, we do have a foundation. The foundation serves the community in providing grants to support general health care needs. And they don't have to be health plan specific, but they're general health care needs. So that is an actual tax-exempt charitable organization. Then the rest of our organizations are actually organized under a holding company called Medica Affiliated Services. And that's just another holding company so that we can file a consolidated tax return. Underneath that, we have Medica Insurance Company, and that's a large organization. It's actually in a diamond-shaped box because it's a for-profit company, and the reason for that is it's just the Minnesota statutes. If you're going to have an insurance company, you're a stock company or a mutual company, and mutuals wouldn't work within our organizational structure, so it's a stock company. All shares are owned. The only shareholder is Medica Affiliated Services, and the stock certificate sits in my office. So there are no shareholders, even though it is a for-profit insurance company. It acts inside of our Medica holding company, inside of our Medica mission, the same mission that Jay mentioned earlier, governs all the work that's in Medica Insurance Company. And the reason that entity was formed is HMOs back in 1983 were not able to offer any out-of-network coverage. So basically, if you ended up out-of-network, you had no coverage because we weren't allowed under the HMO laws to provide that. So we created the insurance company to broaden the product offerings to the employers in Minnesota back in 1983. Sorry. Off to the right, we have a couple of other entities. Medica Health Management provides health management, health coaching, health, just general health care coordination to some of our vulnerable populations that we administer. That entity is made up of nurse practitioners and social workers, et cetera. To the right of that is Medica Self-Insured, and this is as we started our business writing, working with employer groups. As employer groups grow to a certain size, they feel comfortable taking the insurance risk, and so they go self-funded. When they do that, they need an administrator to still process all the claims and to help them administer the benefits that they've offered to their employees. And so you need a third-party administrator. So that's a separate legal entity that does administration for those employers that have gotten large enough to take on some of the risk themselves. And then last year we purchased another third-party administrator from Mayo, which is that diamond box off to the right. MMSI, Inc. is very similar to Medica Self-Insured, but it was previously owned by Mayo Health Systems as they were running their own employee benefit plan through their own TPA. They needed to upgrade their systems and stuff, so we ended up acquiring that entity. So the main concept here is that Medica Holding Company at the top is the ultimate owning entity. So every nonprofit's sole member is Medica Holding Company, and all the stock certificates, all the shares are technically owned by Medica Holding Company. Any dividends that we do, any capital transactions that we do, stay within this page. Nothing leaves. Nothing can leave because of the nonprofit statutes that govern Medica Holding Company under 317A. So I know that there is some confusion about whether money is leaving the state. And it's basically, as we've done dividends, they've been transfers of cash from one Medica bank account to another. And the reason being, every insurance type transaction requires capital to support it. So if we offer coverage to an individual, the state requires, as they should, that we have capital in the bank in case the claims come in higher than expected. They could come in at $1 million or $5 million. We need to have the capital in the right place to support that. And so our capital transactions, whether they're called dividends or other sorts of transfers, are all in an effort to make sure we've got capital to meet the needs of our members, the healthcare needs of our members, and to make sure we can meet the promises that we make when we issue a policy.
So, Madam Chair and members, I think that's important context for the committee, as they understand that everything that happens underneath, as Ms. Quist said, the holding company of Medica stays within that nonprofit holding company. Everything is contained within them. So some of the questions from a couple members about the word dividend and what it means. Obviously, for a nonprofit, it means something much different because everything stays inside our organization. There's not some sort of payment that goes outside it to outside shareholders. There is no such thing. So I hope that answers some of the questions that you all had on the front end. I know there are plenty more, but again, we're happy to be here and testify in front of you and be able to give you some more context as to what's happening here.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the testifiers, just so I'm clear, do any of the monies that were transferred in dividends, do any of those go to any other entities or organizations other than nonprofits?
So, McLaren.
Madam Chair and Representative Hamilton, it all stays within the organizations that you see on that sheet, Representative Hamilton.
Which means yes, Representative.
Which means yes, yeah. It's everything's underneath that nonprofit holding company,
Representative Hamilton.
And my second question is: are the definitions for nonprofit corporations in Minnesota the same in Wisconsin? Meaning, in Wisconsin, do those dividends need to stay within entities that are nonprofits, or can they be transferred to for-profit entities?
Mr. McLaren.
So, Madam Chair and Representative Hamilton, to answer your question very directly, I think the answer, well, according to your question, no, we cannot transfer those funds anywhere else, or yes, Wisconsin does have similar requirements, meaning that any funds that go to Medi-Health plans of Wisconsin, there's not some sort of escape hatch where they can get out in somewhere else, right? Everything stays within the confines of our holding company.
Thank you.
Representative Hamilton. But, Mr. McLaren, but in this chart, if, you know, once the money leaves the Medi-Health plans, it can be moved anywhere in this chart, and so under the explanation we just got from Ms. Quist, it could go to the Medica Insurance Company, which is for-profit, and at that point, basically, the money can be used for anything that the organization wants to use it for, even if there's only one shareholder, and it can that form can be changed at any time. I mean, the state of Minnesota has absolutely no control anymore once the money leaves, and even if it just goes to the Medica Holding Company, am I right there?
So, Madam Chair, members, and I'd let Ms. Quist weigh in if she'd like to also, but When you were talking earlier about some of the requirements on HMOs, there are similar types of requirements on nonprofits, right? Meaning that all the funds that are made by a nonprofit organization need to go back in and be invested in the needs of our members and the needs of the communities that we serve. So there are similar requirements on us as a nonprofit organization in the state of Minnesota.
Madam Chair, I'd like to add something to that, in that insurance companies in Minnesota have very similar statutes. In fact, most of the statutes governing the HMO also govern insurance company, and they are regulated by the Minnesota Department of Commerce. And so the dividend requirement, Department of Commerce does the same review that Department of Health did in making sure that the organization isn't left bare and not able to pay its claims, not able to meet its own needs. It's not that there isn't any regulation around it. There's more regulation. It's just a different regulator.
Okay. Representative Hamilton, did you have a follow-up? Okay.
Not yet.
Okay. We have Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Hey, thanks for your a couple things. First, I want to thank you for sending the letter. We maybe have other HMOs who've done similar transfers and haven't notified us. And evidently, according to the current law, you didn't have to notify us, so I do appreciate that. Just a couple clarification from Ms. Quist, is it? Yeah. That and maybe I didn't hear this correctly. So did I hear that the Medicaid health plans of Wisconsin primarily insure Minnesotans, or did I hear that wrong?
Ms. Quist.
Madam Chair, Representative, in 2014, primarily Medicaid health plans of Wisconsin served Minnesotans as well as Wisconsin people from Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. In 2018, the Minnesota membership was actually moved into the Medicaid insurance company product line. So today, as we sit, more of the all the business is in Wisconsin. All the members are in Western Wisconsin. But prior to 1/1/18, the majority were Minnesotans.
Okay. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. The other thing, if I understood your presentation correctly, you're required by state law to keep a certain amount of reserves based on potential claims under the insurance products. And what you seem to indicate, if I understood it properly, you made this move to make sure you are in compliance with the law as far as adequate reserves for the health insurance products that you have out there. Is that, am I understanding that correctly?
Ms. Quist.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, the capital is moved around within our organization as we look at our lines of business and how much volume we have potential in each potential of claims inside of each legal entity. There is a complex formula that's required by the National Insurance Commissioners, who are regulating all of us from a more national level. They have set requirements that are set by actuaries, and each one of our entities has to meet those requirements. At the time that we did the transfer last year to Medicaid Health Plans of Wisconsin, that entity, if we had not made that transfer, would not have met the minimum requirements. In this case, for the most recent one, we've put the dividend up into Medica Holding Company in order to be flexible on where those community needs might be. We don't know at this point that any one of our entities needs it tomorrow, so it's waiting for future deployment. And something just as a clarification on, as we do dividends, dividends are a transaction that moves money up in an organizational chain, and capital can move down very, very easily without. It's not called a dividend, so it's a capital contribution. So Medica Holding Company can move money back into Medica Health Plans if needed, back into Medica Health Plans of Wisconsin if needed, any of the other entities downward. It just can't go further up. There's no place to go further up.
Okay, thank you. Representative Mann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just need a couple points of clarification. For Representative Hamilton's question, when he asked if the money was transferred, it was stay in the in other nonprofit areas. Your answer was yes, because it stays in this chart under the medical holding company and anywhere in there, and it's nonprofit. But if there is for-profit companies under that umbrella, then isn't the answer no, because that money can go to for-profit organizations on your map?
So,
Mr. McLaren.
Madam Chair and Representative Mann, so to clarify, thank you for the question. as Ms. Quist explained earlier, there are for-profit organizations underneath our nonprofit holding company, but again, the only shareholder of our for-profit insurance company is our nonprofit holding company. So while there may be for-profit companies in there, it all flows back to and is a part of our nonprofit holding company. There are no outside shareholders that are somehow getting payments. There's no such thing inside our organization. So I hope that clarifies.
And Representative Mann, when I said yes, when I kind of interpreted their answer and said yes, I thought the question was, can the money go to for-profits? And I thought that the answer was yes, it can, because as you just noted, they are in this chart.
Right.
So please continue.
The other question was, so when that money was transferred, the $30 million, to the Medica Health Plan of Wisconsin in 2017, you said that in 2014 that company dealt with both Minnesota and Wisconsin, but as of 2018 it was all Wisconsin. So is it safe to say that in 2017 it was mainly Wisconsin, if not all completely by then? Or was it, and that money did in fact go to people living and working in Wisconsin?
Ms. Quist.
Madam Chair, Representative, the money stays within the legal entity, and that legal entity has it serves members in Wisconsin and Minnesota. At the time that we did the transfer in 2017, most of the membership was in Minnesota. It wasn't until 2018 that the Minnesota members were now administered by Medica Insurance Company. But it doesn't. It's all within sort of our holding company here. There isn't any money going to anybody in Wisconsin, except as we pay claims, as we process premiums. You know, we're doing that here in Minnesota on behalf of our members in Wisconsin. But there isn't any capital or net earnings or anything going into Wisconsin.
Representative Mann.
So it was, you went from mostly Minnesota to zero Minnesota from 2017 to 2018.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Quist.
Representative, Madam Chair, yes, that is correct.
Thank you.
Representative Loeffler. I've got Loeffler, Munson, Kunish Padin, and then Halverson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm wondering if our witnesses might just walk us through your history recently with serving Minnesota residents who are on our public assistance managed care programs. As I recall, you've traditionally been in, probably since you formed the Medicaid health plan back in 1974, 1985 probably was the first time, because I think that's when we started it. But then my understanding and recollection is that at some point you had a contract with the state and decided to back out of it in terms of serving our public health program enrollees in medical assistance and Minnesota Care. Could you give us the time frame of that and how it might relate to the things that are happening in front of us that we've just discussed?
Mr. McLaren.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative Loeffler, I'd be happy to walk through the history of that. So we have served people on Medicaid ever since Medicaid was a pilot project in Minneapolis in the mid-1980s. So we've been a part of that program ever since then, and we continue to be part of that program, serving people who are eligible for Medicaid and Medicare through SNBC and MSHO and MSC Plus. So we are still involved in those programs and in serving folks who are on those programs and in contractual relationship with the Department of Human Services. What you're referencing was in 2016, it became apparent to us that our organization was experiencing significant losses from the contract that we had with the state when it came to serving people on PMAP and MinnesotaCare. And we entered in throughout 2016 some discussions with the Department of Human Services and the administration to share with them information on the claims experience that we were seeing with that population, and to try to reach an agreement on rates to in order to not even make sure that we were made whole, but that it was more appropriate rates to sustain that business that we were serving with the state. And so throughout those negotiations, we tried to come to an agreement. And when it was clear that there would not be an agreement on rates that would be able to keep us in the program, we gave notice to the state, as we were allowed in our contract, that we could no longer sustain the losses, which in 2016 amounted to about $260 million just in that 1 year. So when by the time May of 2017 rolled around, we had offloaded that membership, and they went to other managed care organizations to serve them at that time. And I would say ever since that time, we obviously have an interest in, and we have a desire to serve those members again. I think when it comes to the context that's really important at that time is that the decision that we had to make was in the interest of all of the other members that we serve, particularly hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans who get their health insurance coverage through us. And that it's important that we would be able to remain solvent, as Ms. Quist referenced earlier, solvent to make sure that we can continue to pay the claims for all those folks and make sure that our organization as a whole was financially strong enough to be able to make sure that the insurance coverage that they were buying from us, that they could rely on that moving forward. I would tell you that as we have seen in some other states that we have gone into over the last 4 years, they have experienced insolvencies in those states. And the regulators, when you talk to them about the experience that they had in that, they get very serious. And they had to take calls at the time from providers who didn't know that they would get paid. They had to take calls from consumers who didn't know if they would have health insurance coverage to actually pay the claims that they were experiencing with their providers. And it put them under a lot of stress, I would say. So I just wanted to give some context as to why that decision was made and give you a broader context on that. Thank you.
All right.
Well, Madam Chair.
Representative Loeffler, and I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 members on the list. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. The decision in 2017 to, quote, offload our medical assistants and MinnesotaCare employees, enrollees, meant that hundreds of thousands of people lost their regular source of care, and I heard from a lot of constituents. And so their decision to instead focus on expansion into other states was in some degree in context here. And one needs to understand that the income minus cost is profit in the for-profit business. It is transferred to reserves in the nonprofit world that we're talking about. And while I couldn't quickly on my phone find financial data earlier than 2011, I can just tell you from 2007 to 2011 in the Siegel audited report of our contracts across all public programs, Medica made $259 million off of just the state of Minnesota contracts as a nonprofit. And the reason we have always required nonprofits is so that the reserves that they acquire stay within the state to ride the waves of unpredictable risk, and so that our people always can count on it. We have never had in Minnesota, as far as I know, since this program started in the mid-80s, any health plan go under, because we have had a structure that really protected them and also offered quality coverage to the residents of Minnesota. And so my final request of you is to get some updated, publicly available profit information about the state contracts and your other businesses within the state of Minnesota, so we can better understand what the reserve capacity is and what the real risk was that you felt you had adequate reserves to transfer to other purposes.
Indeed. Thank you, Representative Loeffler. When we see $175 million get transferred out, it does give us a question about the cries of we're worried about our bottom line. Thank you. I have Representative Munson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the org chart. I like these. I'm a visual guy. I just had two questions. The first one, can you confirm that these transfers have no impact on your medical loss ratios? And secondly, the purchase of MMSI from the Mayo Health System, which is a for-profit entity that you purchased or set up, was where did the money come from for the purchase, the acquisition of that company? Was it transferred from nonprofits to purchase that? Were there shareholders of the company that you purchased? I guess that was my question.
Mr. McLaren?
So, Madam Chair and Representative, so to your first question regarding MLR, these transactions have absolutely nothing to do with medical loss ratio. And then I may ask Ms. Quist to help me with a second question regarding the source of the funds for MMSI.
Ms. Quist?
Madam Chair, the source was Medica Self-Insured. So we transferred, we did a dividend from Medica Self-Insured up to Medica Affiliated Services, and then Medica Affiliated Services purchased MMSI, Inc., which was, it's set up as a for-profit because Mayo set it up that way. But it was run inside their nonprofit umbrella as well.
Thank you. Representative Kunesh-Podein. So I have Kunesh-Podein, Halverson, Hamilton, Bierman, Schultz, Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm going to ask you some of those same questions I asked the testifiers before. I'm not quite sure where to start, but I'll start with the $175 million that you transferred out. Where did those dividends or where did that money come from?
Mr. McLaren?
So, Madam Chair and Representative, so as we've explained in the Department of Health, it came from Medica Health Plans, which is the nonprofit HMO inside our organization.
And how did that accumulate? And how did it accumulate to that amount of money?
Mr. McLaren.
So, Madam Chair and Representative, as I explained in the background of our organization, that was the very first entity that we created in the mid-1970s. And so it served commercial employers in Hennepin County and then statewide for our organization for decades. So in terms of where did the funds come from, a lot of it came from any sort of operating margin that we got from serving those employer-based members since the mid-1970s. It came from interest that was earned on that money that was sitting there to help protect our members from unexpected higher claims. And then part of it, as we entered into different lines of business in Minnesota and elsewhere, it comes from those sources as well. So a good example is we continue to offer coverage to people in the individual market in North Dakota through our HMO. Another example is we served, obviously, as we've been discussing, people on Medicare and Medicaid in the state of Minnesota in that entity. So it came from any sort of operating margin from those lines of business and then also interest income on that ever since that time.
Follow-up, please.
Representative Kunesh-Podein.
So some of this is unspent or unused, like Medicaid money? Would that be true?
Mr. McLaren.
So, Madam Chair and Representative, so it is funds that were earned or operating income off of the many different lines of business that we have for over 40 years. And it's a variety of different lines of business that we're involved in our mm-hmm. HMO. So to try to pin it back or identify it back to one line of business, once the money's earned or lost, I mean, it's really hard. It's difficult to say, or it's impossible to say exactly what the source was when it served so many different type of customers.
So Representative Kunesh-Podein, it sounds like if there was excess earnings from our Medicaid programs, that it would have been mixed right in there with the rest of the reserve. I think that's what I heard Mr. McLaren saying.
Okay, I understand that. And then
Representative Kunesh-Podein.
So how did such a vast amount of money get collected in excess?
Mr. McLaren. And just to be clear, we don't know what the amount is.
Well, pardon me, if they transferred $30 million, $90 million, $55 million, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. Mr. McLaren.
So, Madam Chair and Representative, an important thing to know about it, insurance and an insurance company and how we operate is that the amount of money that we have available to back up the claims that we're essentially insuring, mm-hmm. like, have to be appropriate enough, and this goes back to some of the line of questioning earlier, of the lines of business that we're taking on. So essentially, the amount of funds that we have to back that up have to grow over time in order to keep up with the growth of medical inflation.
Mm-hmm.
And so to probably put it in better terms, even though this isn't how risk is calculated, we have, as an organization as a whole, about 3 months worth of reserves set aside to help back the insurance policies and, you know, the risk that we're taking on for all different lines of business. And I just saw a former state representative today who used to work in the nonprofit space, and we worked with 10 years ago on this issue. And, you know, to compare and contrast, nonprofits are recommended to have about a year worth of reserves set aside. So, you know, the funds that we have there are to protect against the losses and to protect against those members. And they, yes, do come from, when it goes back to the source, interest that we earn off that funds itself, and then also any sort of operating income that we get from it. But we also take losses, too, from different lines of business.
I just have
okay, a Representative Kunesh-Pedin.
Thank you. And then you mentioned something about that you reinvest those funds back into clients or whatever that is. What are some examples of how you reinvest that money back in?
Mr. McLaren.
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative, a really good example is in the org chart where you see the Medica Foundation. So even over the last 15 years, the Medica Foundation has given away $26 million in grants, primarily in Minnesota. And so that's one of the ways that we reinvest in the communities, and we reinvest in a lot of different nonprofits and the communities that we serve throughout Minnesota. And that's just one example.
Okay, I'm going to go to, we've got Representative Hamilton, and then Veerman, then Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two questions. My first question is, could staff or somebody help me out with the definition of capital contribution? That would be my first question.
Ms. Clarkfist.
Madam Chair and Representative Hamilton, I'll have to look it up.
Okay. And then my second question to the testifiers is following this, if dividends were passed from Medica Health Plans up to Medica Holding Company in the form of dividends, then what I hear is that Medica Holding Company, through capital contribution, could pass dollars to the for-profit. Is that accurate?
Ms. Quist?
Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, yes, it is true. It can go to any of the capital can move down into any of the legal entities inside of the holding company. It just cannot leave the holding company structure. So it can support any of these lines of business. And as I said earlier, the Medica Insurance Company is a for-profit only because it's required to be a for-profit entity. It acts and has a mission exactly the same as our nonprofits. So it's a for-profit, I'd say, in name only. It runs every day, every line of business runs as a nonprofit.
And so, Madam Chair, my question is, could this dollar be defined as both a dividend and a capital contribution? Therefore, it can be transferred from a nonprofit to a for-profit. I guess that is my question. So it sounds like it's the same monies, and so there is a way to transfer the dollars out of a nonprofit to a for-profit entity. It all depends on how we define the dollar, I believe, and I may be wrong, but that's where I'd like staff to help me out with the definition.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Hamilton. It does appear that money that was previously protected by law in Minnesota can now be transferred out and can end up in for-profits. So it does. A dollar is a dollar. Yeah. Representative Veerman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Testifiers, thanks for being here today and fielding the questions. I have a few more. regarding the MHP plan, which I think I heard that was a nonprofit Minnesota, is that correct? And that then there was the MIC, which is a for-profit also operating in Minnesota. Could you tell me the relative size of each by comparison? Is one much bigger than the other?
Ms. Quist?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, Medica Insurance Company is now larger, much larger than Medica Health Plans. Medica Health Plans is currently writes, I would say, just under $1 billion of coverage each year. That's our premium volume. And Medica Insurance Company is probably $3 billion. So it's probably a roughly 1-to-3 ratio today.
Okay, thank you. And a follow-up on that is, what is the proportion of your business of all insurance companies in Minnesota? What number are you in the ranking? Could you tell me?
Ms. Quist?
Madam Chair, Representative, in Minnesota we are about 22%.
And a couple more questions, please. I know it's probably public knowledge, but I didn't look it up. But can you tell me just the earnings of last year from the company?
Ms. Quist?
Madam Chair, the last year that we have finalized is 2017, and the earnings on the overall company was $166 million.
And two more quick questions.
Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I understood you obviously have to keep a lot of reserves for claims. That makes complete sense to me. You said maybe 3 months to a year's worth of reserves on hand, of course. Can you tell me if there's other assets that Medica invests in, either in the Medica Foundation or in one of the other entities in physical property or any other investments with those earnings?
Ms. Quist?
Madam Chair, Representative. Medica's assets include generally it's cash and mostly bonds. Most insurance companies invest in treasury bonds, corporate bonds, that sort of thing. So most of our assets are held that way. We do own our own building. So it's and that's under Medica Health Plans owns our home office building.
One more question, please. This is in regards to the board of directors and CEO. I presume this is public knowledge as well. Can you tell me perhaps what the average salary is of a board of directors member and the CEO of the company?
Ms. Quist?
Madam Chair, Representative, our board is compensated. I'd say the average is off the top of my head again. It is public knowledge or public information. I just don't have it memorized. It's probably about $75,000 a year. And the our chief executive officer is paid a salary of approximately $1 million, but can earn bonuses as well.
That was my next question. Please, was bonuses or you don't have stock options at all? So he would get. Do the board members, are they up for bonuses as well yearly?
Ms. Quist?
Madam Chair, Representative, no, they only earn a stipend for their attendance at meetings and their service on the board. They do not have any compensation that varies.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering, when you identify your admitted assets to help convey what a substantial portion is when you transfer these funds, what are you including in your admitted assets when you're self-reporting to the agency?
Ms. Quist?
Madam Chair, Representative, admitted assets is a technical term that is used in statutory accounting, and it is, if you look at a balance sheet, you've got your assets, liabilities, and capital. And in statutory accounting, your assets are just a little bit less than what they are in GAAP, so they're called admitted assets. Because anything that is not that you can't convert to cash very quickly, you don't count. So in terms of Medica Health Plans, admitted assets includes the bonds, some stocks, cash, the buildings that we own. It includes amounts that are receivable to us from from employers, receivable to us maybe from the government. And in the case of Medi-Cal health plans, we carry a very large receivable because our contract with the Department of Human Services allows them to retain a good share of the premium throughout the year, and they return it to us at the in the middle of July. So those kinds of receivables are on included in admitted assets as well.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So do you believe these $55 million transfer, the 90 and the 30, would you say that those are substantial or not substantial transfers?
Ms. Quist?
Madam Chair, Representative, we consider them to be not substantial.
What would be substantial, Madam Chair? What would be substantial?
Madam Chair, Representative, again, the term is not defined in statute, but generally, as this is in contemplation of a conversion to for-profit, you would have to take more than 75% of your assets in order to do a conversion or to be purchased by a for-profit. So definitely over 50%.
Thank you. And one more question, Madam Chair. So what year did you form the Medica Insurance Company, the for-profit entity?
1983.
And why did you, thank you, Madam Chair, why did you form that company, that entity?
Ms. Quiz.
Madam Chair, Representative, it was formed because the groups that we were writing, their employees wanted to have an out-of-network option. And at that point, state law or the statutes governing Medi-Cal health plans did not allow any payments to providers that we did not have under contract. So it's to serve a market need, and we're not alone in this. This is a common. There's an insurance company on just about every health plan's legal entity chart.
Thank you.
Representative Schultz.
Just one more comment. So if members wanted to restore this language, there's a House File 572 they can sign on to restore this language.
All right. Thank you, Representative Schultz. Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just needed a quick clarification on the for-profit portions. What do those profits go to in the umbrella of the nonprofit there? How does that work again?
Ms. Quist.
Madam Chair, Representative. The profits in Medica Insurance Company act exactly the same as in Medica health plans, is that they stay in the entity unless we dividend them into another Medica entity. And so we have in the past done dividends from Medica Insurance Company up to Medica Holding Company in order to support Medica health plans of Wisconsin in the past, for instance. So those are... They're treated exactly the same. The only difference is it's Minnesota Department of Commerce we send the request to instead of Minnesota Department of Health.
Thank you. Representative Mann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Has the Medica health plans asked for or received any reinsurance money to help mitigate costs?
Mr. McLaren.
So, Madam Chair and Representative, when it comes to the state program for reinsurance, no, we have not received any funds from that yet. Those transfers will be occurring over the summer.
So you did ask for them?
Representative Mann.
So, Madam Chair and Representative, we offer health insurance coverage in the individual market, and we do have members who are in that corridor where our claims qualify for reinsurance. So, yes, we are part of the program.
Follow-up question.
Representative Mann.
So you were able to theoretically profit $160 million, and you transferred another $175 million. Can you explain why you need more money for reinsurance? And why? Because you said several times that the money that you make, you reinvest back into the company. And it would make sense to take that money and reinvest it back into insurance so that premiums become lower. But instead, you asked for more money from the state to do that. Can you explain that?
Mr. McLaren?
So, Madam Chair and Representative, when I talked earlier about our organization as a whole and that we have about 3 months' worth of funds set aside to help back the policies that we're selling and all the different risks that we're taking on, that's pretty consistent with the industry as a whole. And so... regardless of where those funds reside inside our organization, it still amounts to about 3 months. And that was something that's been, it's been similar for a long time, but meaning that any sort of funds inside our organization need to stay around 3 months or a certain percentage of the risk that we're taking on in order to back those policies that we have. So I don't know if that answers your question, but essentially, like, the funds stay within our company. It's not as if funds are going outside our company. They still represent about 3 months of all the total claims that we are writing on a regular basis. So essentially, like, the funds are there to back up the policies that we're writing, Representative.
Yeah. Okay. And I'm going to take the final question because we're kind of out of time here. And that is, you know, what we've been talking about here is transfers of funds that are at least in part, probably maybe entirely, accrued under the nonprofit status of Medicare health plans. And I would just like to ask you, if you can, Ms. Quist, you might be the person to ask us of, what is nonprofit status worth to a company in Minnesota? I mean, we know that it means that you're not paying taxes on the money that's accrued. It's not profit. It's revenue over expenses. I don't know what the technical term is for a nonprofit, but you don't have profits, and you're not paying taxes on profits. I know there's some premium taxes and so on, but there are obviously, having nonprofit status is a great benefit. I assume it's a great benefit to companies, and it's kind of a gift from the taxpayer. And so can you quantify for us at all what that nonprofit status is worth?
Madam Chair, I can Jay's going to be better at the public policy impact of that, but I can talk about the numbers. Medica Health Plans is tax exempt, so its business is not subject to federal income tax, state income tax. In our grand scheme of our entire organization, most of our profits are actually earned in Medica Insurance Company. And as you can see, anything under Medica-affiliated services is fully taxable, even our nonprofits that are under there. So there's a difference between tax-exempt and taxable nonprofits. Medica Health Plans is actually a tax-exempt nonprofit. In the case of 2017, the net earnings over expenses, as you understand it, was in the $50 million range. So if we had been in the 34% tax range, then we would have paid taxes of $10 million. So there is some benefit to being nonprofit. In Medica's overall world, 90% of our business is sitting in a taxable environment, and so we do pay tax on all most of our profits.
Well, Ms. Quist, what we're discussing here today, though, is money that's being moved out of a nonprofit, not your for-profit business. So this is money that hasn't been taxed. And in some real sense, I think the accumulation of this money is traced back to the taxpayers of Minnesota who've given the company a big benefit of having this nonprofit status, not to mention the business from our Medicaid program over the years, which, as Representative Loeffler pointed out, has resulted in the accumulation of some assets. So, you know, that's kind of my point here today. But I really do appreciate your spending this time with us and answering some questions. We do hope that we've had a little bit of transparency shed on this really important process when we talk about $175 million having been transferred out. And we know that there's right now probably not a lot in law to prevent further transfers. You know, a transfer of $30 million or $55 million can be said to be non-substantial. The definition of that is there is none, apparently. And there's nothing to prevent one of those transfers every week, every month, every 2 months until the, you know, I don't know how, at what point we're actually going to define that as substantial, but I do think this is an issue that members should think about, and this is something that I believe that we as representatives really owe it to the taxpayers of Minnesota to be very serious about this and take a close look at it. So thank you very much for your appearance today and answering our questions. We really do appreciate it. The meeting's adjourned.